I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. A number of Republican members of Congress criticized Donald Trump on the campaign trail for his comments about women, Muslims, Mexicans, veterans, Gold Star families. And now that he's going to be president, they are ready to work with him. Some have been downright giddy. Trump went on social media last night to describe a list of executive actions he will take in the first 100 days, including withdrawing from TPP, easing restrictions on fossil fuels, instructing the Department of Defense to protect against cyber attacks, and the Department of Labor to go after visa violations. Notably absent, getting rid of the Affordable Care Act, deporting undocumented immigrants, building a wall along the Mexico border, and a Muslim ban. We asked Norman Ornstein to join us. He's a longtime Congress watcher to tell us what to anticipate from a Trump presidency, how Trump will work with Congress. Norm Ornstein is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, a contributing editor at The Atlantic, co-author of two books with Thomas Mann, The Broken Branch, How Congress is Failing America and How to Get It Back on Track, and It's Even Worse Than It Looks, How the American Constitutional System Collided with the New Politics of Extremism. And Norm Ornstein, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be with you, Mark.
You were one of the few analysts or handful of analysts last summer who saw that Donald Trump could win the Republican primary. What did you see that others missed?
Well, there were a whole host of things. It was fairly clear that that populist rage out there had not dissipated in any significant fashion since the financial collapse of 2008, that it was strong on both sides. Of course, Bernie Sanders emerged as an unlikely challenger on the Democratic side, but it was stronger on the Republican. Just as important, maybe even more important than that, is I saw a Republican Party that had distorted itself in dramatic fashion, especially during the Obama years. There was a concerted effort after 2008, heading towards the midterms in 2010, to unite and oppose everything he wanted to do, delegitimize him and the entire governing process. And it worked like a charm in that midterm in 2010. It worked again in 2014. But what I saw was it wasn't just creating and inciting anger with the Tea Party people at Obama and the Democrats, but at all of Washington and all of governing. And that meant to me an outsider was much more likely to emerge as the Republican nominee. Remember, really, besides Trump, the other viable candidate at the end was Ted Cruz, the kind of insider's outsider. And that we had the other phenomena, of course, which is the changing demographics and diversity of the United States, so that the immigration issue, if it were exploited, was going to be a big one in that Republican primary process. And Trump exploited it and emerged where he was and where he is.
I wonder whether his supporters are going to be disappointed. I read what Donald Trump said on social media last night and some of the things that he did not say that he had promised his supporters he would do. I'm actually looking at my TV set here. Trump White House won't investigate Clinton. He got a lot of his supporters really fired up when he had them chanting, "Lock her up." Has he raised expectations for his people?
I think he's raised expectations in a whole host of ways, but that one is going to be overshadowed very much by the promise, two promises. One, of course, that he will turn Washington upside down, and we're seeing already significant evidence of that, but also that he is going to make win so much that they'll get tired of winning. And let's face it.
What does that mean? What does that mean, Norm Ornstein?
It means, one, see, I don't know anything about policy, and so I'm going to use catchphrases. But two, it was hitting at the frustration that lots of people have, a lot of it real, about stagnant wages and growing inequality, about people in industries that are collapsing not because government has abandoned them, but because the world is changing, coal, fossil fuels, and other ways. And he has promised them that there won't be as much competition for jobs because those immigrants are going away, that he is going to bring back magically coal and shale oil and other fossil fuels, that they're going to have the high-quality, high-paying jobs that they had before, and that their world is going to turn in a positive direction. That when it doesn't happen, and if it doesn't happen, will be a much more crushing disappointment than what happens to Hillary Clinton, who, after all, is no longer a contender for president.
I wonder, too, and I'm actually looking at something that Elizabeth Warren said. Here she is speaking about Donald Trump. Quoting her, he spoke of the need to reform our trade deals so they aren't raw deals for the American people. He said he will not cut Social Security benefits. He talked about the need to address the rising cost of college and about helping working parents struggling with the high cost of child care. He spoke of the urgency of rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure and putting people back to work. He spoke to the real sense of millions of Americans that their government and their economy has abandoned them, and he promised to rebuild our economy for working people. She, Bernie Sanders, other liberal Democrats and other Democrats have said, we will work with you on the things that we agree with you on. Is there some middle ground that you see?
Well, you know, I was struck by those comments as well, because it reflects another reality, which is the Trump candidacy showed the enormous wedge that exists between the policy preferences of his populist supporters and the elite conservatives in Washington. They do unite on one thing, and we're going to get that in a big way, and that's a gigantic set of tax cuts, and that'll be jammed through with much more for the wealthy, which they don't particularly want, but there'll be tax cuts. They don't agree on Social Security or on Medicare. They don't agree on trade. They don't agree on infrastructure or government spending in some of these areas, and we're going to find some tension there. We already have. We had, of course, Paul Ryan throw out very early on, and somebody who's clashed during the campaign pretty frequently with Trump, saying, well, I think it's time to move towards privatization of Medicare. Mm. We have the person, actually, that Trump put in charge of the liaison with the Social Security Administration who supported privatizing Social Security. Those aren't positions that Trump has taken. Democrats are going to be with Trump on protecting and enhancing Social Security and Medicare. Democrats have long wanted an ambitious infrastructure plan. But we also always have to remember that the devil is in the details. Trump's infrastructure plan, which was twice as large as Clinton's, is financed through, guess what, big tax cuts for the wealthy, the ones who will invest in infrastructure programs, some of which are already underway, and they're going to get the benefits, not necessarily the workers. Democrats are not going to support that, and we're going to have a big tug of war there. And at the same time, many of Trump's appointees are going to reach a level of heartburn for Republicans who will be pushed and forced to support them. That may mean some of them decide that they'll join with Democrats to block those nominees. It's going to be a very difficult relationship, I think, with Congress, made more significant, too, because, let's face it, presidents always want to be the alpha male here. They think they're the first branch of government, not Congress. And Congress often resists there. But we've never had an alpha male as alpha as Donald Trump, nor one who has almost no understanding of the dynamics of the American political process or how the Constitution works.
Or one that ran or was a birther for many years, who belittled the job, belittled the American, the fact that President Obama was an American. How much do you think that got him this job, if I can put it that way?
Sure. You know, back when Trump became a birther, to me and to many others, it was evident that this was an attempt to give him credentials as a Republican, first of all, because Republicans loved it, and he had never been a Republican before, but to position himself for a run for president. That gave him the street cred. And, of course, he used Twitter and used the media to become a prominent figure in that movement. What he said was repeated lies and quite despicable, but it moved him into a position of having a credible candidacy. And it's going to hurt him even more, of course, with Democrats who already resent him. But I think, you know, there's another factor here that we have to keep in mind that's becoming larger and larger, and that's going to be the real acid test for Republicans in Congress who put their country first and put their own institution first. And that is the kleptocracy that we see emerging right before our very eyes. You know, Trump tweeted today, everybody knew I had business holdings. It's only the corrupt media that are focusing on this. We did not realize the extent to which he would be in your face in doing the pay-for-play that he condemned with Clinton. But, you know, meeting as a president-elect with your business partners in India to promote your own businesses, watching foreign dignitaries line up to try and get ultra-expensive rooms at the Trump Hotel to curry favor, having your daughter on the line, the one who's running some of these businesses, as you talk to foreign leaders on unsecured lines, of course, having, as you look at the timeline, a discussion with the Argentinian president in which you deny that you discussed the need to get permits for your big project down there, and the next day after your first conversation, there's an announcement that the project is moving forward. The fact that we're going to have Trump's holdings worth billions out there, and the president basically shaking down, in some cases, countries to get projects approved, and in other cases, having big payments made to curry favor, this is unprecedented. Will a Congress investigate, and what will they do about it? May in the end overshadow a lot of these policy disputes.
In fact, that's the reason we wanted to do the show, and I have multiple questions for you about a minute or so from our first break here. You use the word kleptocracy. That's the word that we associate with dictators, often in poor countries that line their own pockets. You use that. You wrote that word,
yes,
as well, Norman Ornstein.
I did, and you know, the analogies here are as you say, it's the Mubarak family, which had billions salted away in Swiss banks. The Erdogan family, the autocratic, increasingly dictatorial leader in Turkey, who, when an independent judiciary began to investigate his son, who had stolen from the country billions, it appears, basically shut down that investigation and the judiciary. It's Karzai in Afghanistan. The difference is these are poor countries that have no leverage. This is the United States of America, the most powerful country in the world. If the president of the United States makes it clear that unless he gets what he wants, the power of the United States will work in a fashion that may hurt a country, what do you think is going to happen? And if let's take another example.
Well, you know what? Hold on to that example, yeah, okay, only because the clock is telling me we're up on a break here. That's Norman Ornstein, our guest in this portion of Radio Times, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, contributing editor at The Atlantic. And we called him up to join us to talk about Donald Trump, the Congress, his potential conflicts of interest. 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Norm Ornstein about how it looks like President Trump will run the country and perhaps run his business. Norman, let me pick up on something you said right before the break. And of course, God, I think all of us thinking about when he was running for president, talking about Hillary Clinton as a crook, the fact that there was the Clinton Foundation, they made money making speeches, raising allegations that there was some kind of quid pro quo. And here we are talking about Donald Trump and his Trump Organization, which of course is a business organization with ties around the world.
And a private business organization. So we have no idea exactly what those holdings are. We can't hold anything or any part of it accountable. And the fact that he's going to let his family run it is utterly unprecedented. All of this, especially because there are holdings in at least 18 countries and probably more, very likely violates the emoluments clause of the Constitution that's guarding against foreign interests corrupting the U.S. But I was going to give an example.
Sure.
Imagine, Marty, if Donald Jr., Eric, and Ivanka go to Moscow, and an oligarch with very close ties to Vladimir Putin says, I would like to build a couple of luxury hotels here in Moscow. I want to license the Trump name. I'm going to give you $1 billion to license the Trump name. And $1 billion flows to the Trump Corporation, which means it flows to the President of the United States. It comes from somebody very close to Putin. What would we think of something like that? And we wouldn't necessarily even know about it. I would think of that as being a bribe.
Hmm.
And, of course, it becomes very clear if the money gets doled out in installments that if Trump did something that was going to anger the regime in Moscow, maybe the payments stop. And he has to every day very likely face situations where doing something that is in the U.S.'s national interest might clash with his own business interests. And there is nothing in Donald Trump's background to suggest that he will put the U.S. Mm. interests ahead of those commercial interests. It is unprecedented and, to me, extraordinarily frightening. And we're seeing it operate before he's even taken the oath of office.
Well, of course, bribery is illegal. Here's a comment from Michael. He's going to create a lot of jobs for lawyers litigating the multitude of lawsuits. Does this open the door, Norm, to people suing the President of the United States?
It does. And in one of the many, many ironies in this process, a long time ago, there was a lawyer named Conway, who was a principal figure in the Paula Jones case that had the Supreme Court ruling that a civil lawsuit could go forward against the President of the United States. In that case, it was Bill Clinton. That Conway is the husband of Kelly Ann Conway. And under the Paula Jones precedent, all of these civil lawsuits, there are already more than 50 against Trump for his business dealings, move forward. And there will be more, undoubtedly. And we're going to see a lot of suits brought on constitutional matters against Trump. And it's going to be a real test for the courts. But also, Jason Chaffetz has devoted an enormous amount of taxpayer money and an enormous amount of attention to the Trump, to the Clinton Foundation, to the Clinton emails, to Benghazi. Is this going to be an honest lawmaker who will start to look at some of these questions of corruption with the new president, who happens to be a president of his own party? We're going to have some tests for people like that. And we're going to have tests for people like Senators Jeff Flake and John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Susan Collins and Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander and the others who have shown in the past a willingness to do what Graham said during the campaign, put country ahead of party. Are they going to do it now with some of these highly questionable nominees? What about a Rudy Giuliani, who's had his own deep business activities, often with extraordinarily vicious and corrupt regimes? Are you really going to confirm him as a Secretary of State or the head of National Intelligence? We've got some gut checks ahead for lots of people here.
Well, again, going back to the campaign, Donald Trump certainly railed against Washington wanting to drain the swamp, also talking about the level of self-dealing that he believed was happening in Washington. And what you're describing, Norm, seems like self-dealing writ large.
It is. Of course, not the first or only one of these great promises that will be broken. You know, Trump did announce that they were purging lobbyists from the transition, which effectively meant purging the remaining people who had any kind of a tie to Chris Christie, who, of course, has been punished because he prosecuted Jared Kushner's father. That's the son-in-law of Donald Trump. They've announced new rules to limit lobbyists in the new administration. But when you look at the details, they're not very prominent ones. And I think what we're seeing is if we are draining the swamp, it's the alligators who are draining the swamp, and they're going to create a whole new one around Trump Enterprises.
Can Donald Trump be forced to release his tax returns now that he's president, or even be forced to create a real blind trust?
Forced, no. And one of the things, let me give a caveat to that. The law specifically exempts the president from most of the conflict of interest rules that apply to his appointees. The law exempts the president from what applies to the people he's bringing in high positions, which is to give financial disclosures that include their tax returns. Right now, he is not legally required to do those things. I mentioned the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution, which should limit his foreign bribery opportunities, but may not. But, of course, the law could be rewritten. And this is another challenge for a Republican Congress. Are you going to be honest with the American people and do what should be done under these circumstances? We've always had an assumption in the past that presidents were going to bend over backwards to make sure, you know, you're not there to enrich yourself. You're not going to have to worry about money, let's face it, if you're a president for the rest of your life. But you're there for another set of purposes, and that you're going to make sacrifices if necessary to take on this unique responsibility. And for the first time, we have a president who's basically thumbing his nose at all of that. Will Congress respond? I'm skeptical, I have to say, because I think they're so tribal in nature that they're not going to do anything that would create a problem for this president until perhaps it goes way too far down the road.
Well, we will be checking in with you, Norman Ornstein. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio
Sure.
Times.
You bet, Marty.
You're welcome. Resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and contributing editor at The Atlantic. Well, Donald Trump's unconventional campaign looks like it's turning into an unconventional presidency because of his global business empire. He said he would put the Trump Organization into a blind trust run by his children, raising eyebrows and concerns about conflict of interest, something we just heard from Norman Ornstein. His children are part of his transition team. His daughter Ivanka even sat in on a closed meeting with the prime minister of Japan last week. The New York Times reported that Trump met last week with his business partners from India who are working on a Trump-branded apartment complex. Well, joining us is the reporter of that story, Eric Lipton. He's investigative reporter for the New York Times covering President-elect Donald Trump. And Eric, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Let me ask you, without seeing Donald Trump's tax returns, do we really know the extent of his business ties overseas? I know there was the financial disclosure form, but I'm not sure how thorough that was.
Yeah, I mean, we have a decent amount of visibility into that. We have through the financial disclosure report and also through sort of PDF that his people put out. We know where they have both branded properties that he is simply selling his naming rights, essentially, and then also properties they own directly. And they're literally in countries all over the world, particularly the branded properties are in South Korea and Uruguay and Turkey and India and Brazil and, Dubai, the Philippines, United Arab Emirates. Those are just some of them. So we do have some visibility into it, but we don't know everything. I mean, he may be involved in certain partnerships that we don't know where those investments have real estate.
Well, let me pick up on the story that you had in the New York Times. This is about these Indian developers involved with Trump Towers in a place called, what, Pune, P-U-N-E?
Right.
And they met with Donald Trump last week. What do we know about what transpired at this meeting, if anything?
Well, in that situation, it's the first major project being built in India in the Trump's name, and it's through the Trump organization is making a major focus on India, seeing it as a potentially huge market for a rising affluence, and so it's selling apartments in this town, the city of outside of Mumbai, for $2 million apiece. They're full floor apartments. It's kind of a luxury level that is rarely seen in India, and a price point that is crazy for Indian most incomes. And so he has five different projects that are playing out worth approximately $1.5 billion, according to some estimates. It's not his money. He is branding it, but he gets a cut of either a fee or a commission on those sales. And so he met with these business executives who are involved in the projects at the same time as he was working in the transition. And they told reporters back in India that they were already in discussions with the Trump organization about other projects that they wanted to add. And already their association with the president-elect is something they're using to help market their condos and push up prices. So it potentially that could be bringing additional money to Donald Trump organization, because if those condos sell for more and he has a commission agreement with these under the branding rights, then he could be seeing more payments in exchange for his higher stature and therefore the greater marketing capacity for those companies. So the meeting did take place. They have not denied it. And what Trump's people are saying is that it was more of a congratulatory visit. But these guys flew all the way from India to come to Trump's offices and then met with both Trump and all of his at least three of his children. And as we understand it, they were talking about some future possible deals.
Mm. And we should add the fact that he has said that he wants his children to run this blind trust. I think a lot of people raising questions about it. This is not a blind trust because he's got his children there, and it's clear he's very close to them, certainly when it comes to business dealings.
Yeah, I mean, the notion that it's a blind trust is just sort of it's a false assertion. It's just flatly inaccurate. It's not a blind trust, and he's actually sort of given up using that terminology because he said it a couple of times,
right.
But it's just not a blind trust. The potential for conflicts, it's just everywhere you look. I mean, I can clearly state that I don't know that there are conflicts of interest, but the appearance of conflict of interest is everywhere. And it's unavoidable, and it's something that's not going to go away unless he takes the very radical step of liquidating his holdings, which is, I just cannot imagine that he would ever do that. But it really seems like the only option that he has to try to clear the story from a topic that's going to be as overwhelming and never ending as the Hillary emails, are the Clinton Foundation. It's not going away. And I don't know how well, does it really resonate with the American public? I don't know. Would Congress ever take it up? Probably not.
Hmm.
But it's not going away as an issue, because for reporters, when you see these instances where he takes actions that could potentially benefit his interest, we have to write about it. I mean, that's just our job to cover those situations where he's taking actions that are either intentionally or not could benefit his interest. And it's just everywhere you look, this appears to be potentially happening. So we are going to be writing those stories, and it's going to be something that's going to bother him. I mean, he's already was tweeting early this morning suggesting that, the failing New York Times is coming up with inaccurate stories, although they're not calling me to complain about any specific facts.
Interesting. Well, there are so many tentacles to follow. One, of course, is the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. It's an old post office that he refurbished. It's actually owned by the government, the General Services Administration. I mean, there are so many examples of how complex this is.
Yeah, I mean, in this situation, that was a story I did last week,
right.
Sort of pointing that out. And, the notion that his family is a tenant in the General Services Administration building on Pennsylvania Avenue, a couple blocks from the White House, at the same time as he appoints the head of the General Services Administration. How is that possible? So that the guy is if they have a rent dispute, if they have to negotiate new rent, if there's, that he controls the guy who runs the entire agency. And that you're not, as a federal employee, allowed to have contracts with the federal government, because that's a conflict of interest. Or he's got a hotel in Las Vegas where there's a union, the culinary union is attempting to organize and create a union, and he challenged that. And they filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, and the National Labor Relations Board has twice ruled against the Trump hotel there, which he's a part owner of. And now Donald Trump is going to be appointing all the members of the National Labor Relations Board. So how is the National Labor Relations Board going to act on labor disputes that come to them from the hotels that he owns? I mean, that his family owns. Even if Donald Trump says, well, I'm not involved, it's my children, he appoints the members of the NLRB. That's how are they going to adjudicate those cases? I mean, this has never happened before in American history, that you have a president that has so many interests that cross into so many debates that it's going to be difficult. It's going to be interesting. I mean, it's for reporters. It's going to be challenging as well.
Well, we're going to be talking about what Congress either can or can't do. But from your perspective, Eric, does this, in a sense, put the ball in the court of Congress, which, of course, is now controlled by the Republicans, to try to rein in Donald Trump's power?
Well, I mean, you would expect that the Congress has committees that are charged with oversight and in both the House and the Senate. But, you know, being realistic, it's certainly not in the interest of the Republicans that control Congress to appoint committees to investigate this. Mm. And I don't actually have much expectation that that's going to happen. And the Democrats are already calling for review of the potential for conflicts of interest. The Cummings from Maryland has written a letter asking, he's the ranking Democrat on the House Oversight Committee. He's asked the chairman of the committee to do an inquiry into the potential for conflicts. That letter was sent, but there was no reply. And so, you know, the Democrats can have as many press conferences as they want, and they can write as many letters as they want, but they don't have enough votes to actually empower a committee to do an investigation. They don't have the ability to issue subpoenas. They can't get staff to do bipartisan reports. They can do a Democratic staff report, but that never gets much coverage because it's then seen as partisan.
Hmm.
So I don't see any reason why the Republicans would agree to initiate it. There was one Republican who tweeted yesterday, Amish, you know, saying that he had some concerns about this, but I don't. It's not in the party's interest to focus on this. The Republican Party's interest to focus on it at all. So, so therefore, will there be? You know, I mean, how many committees did they create? I'm not speaking partisan in a partisan way here, but to investigate, you know, Benghazi and Hillary Clinton. But I don't see anywhere any movement towards to doing a similar thing to look at the potential conflicts with Donald Trump. And so what does that mean? I mean, I guess the question is, if you're riling up.
Unfortunately, Eric, that music means we have to end our discussion. No, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. We will be following what you're writing about.
Okay, sorry to go on.
No problem. That's Eric Lipton, okay. Investigative reporter for the New York Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. A lot of comments coming in. Previous presidents from Ronald Reagan to Barack Obama put their financial holdings into a blind trust operated by a third party to avoid the problem of conflict of interest. Donald Trump said his children would run his blind trust, raising concerns that decisions he makes as a president could enrich Trump and his family. A group of ethics advisors wrote Trump a letter asking him to put his business assets and investments into a genuine blind trust or to establish a clear firewall so that no family members have any involvement with White House policy decisions. His family is part of his transition team. We asked Meredith McGeehee to join us. She's strategic advisor at the Campaign Legal Center, one of the organizations that signed that letter, also chief of policy programs and strategy at Issue One. Meredith McGeehee, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
Let me begin. I don't know where to begin. There are so many moving parts here, but why are presidents exempt from this conflict of interest law that applies to other parts of our government?
Well, they were originally exempt out of constitutional concerns about separation of powers. And it really hasn't been a problem in the last 40-plus years because, every president either created a blind trust or, in the case of Jimmy Carter, divested himself of the peanut interest that he had, or in the case of Barack Obama, his holdings were really mutual funds and were widely dispersed. So there really wasn't any question of his ability to kind of affect any one particular. So this is really unprecedented territory, and we really don't know in the end what President-elect Trump will do on this aspect.
What is a genuine blind trust? This is what this letter says.
Mm-hmm. A genuine blind trust is when you get someone who is independent from the individual, the government office holder. That person then runs the business and deals with the assets without any knowledge of the politician involved. And they do have a fiduciary responsibility to try and protect those assets and to make moves that make sure that they don't lose value. But it is to be a true blind trust, a qualified blind trust, it does have to be run by someone who is fully independent from the politician involved or the government official.
So is Congress powerless to deal with the situation as it stands today?
In short, the answer is yes. I would note that there's already been some discussion of introducing legislation to extend the requirements to the president and vice president. And you probably will see legislation introduced to do that. I think there may be a bill already drafted and mm-hmm. circulating up there. So you may see that. Of course, it would very likely end up in front of the Supreme Court because there is a question here about some of this applicability. But I would also note that there are many laws that the president, these anti-corruption laws that the president is already subject to. Certainly, the Emoluments Clause is one, which is about what a president can accept from foreign leaders. The Anti-Deficiency Act, which covers the ability of people to represent themselves as speaking on behalf of the government when they don't have a paid position. There's bribery statutes. Hmm. Those certainly apply. The Federal Election Campaign Act, FECA, applies to the president, as well as financial disclosure requirements. So there are laws that apply to the president currently. It's just this is particular situation does not.
Let me just read some of this Emoluments Clause. And I have to say, I think for a lot of people, that's a new word. This is in Section 9 of Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution. It says, no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept any present emolument office or title or of any kind from any king, prince, or foreign state. So is that possible to apply that to the Trump Organization, which, as we know, has business ties around the world?
Yes. Well, I would note that this was codified in the Foreign Gifts and Decorations Act back in the 1960s, and it prohibits a company owned directly by the president from receiving a financial benefit, whether it's a foreign leader or a foreign treasury or a bank, without the consent of Congress. So he could be accused through the actions of his company, even if he is not running it, but he still owns it, mm-hmm. that he may have violated the Constitution. This is not where we want to go, obviously, right. As a country. Having these kinds of questions arise distract from all the many other important issues and difficult issues that face the new president. So I would submit that it is actually in President-elect Trump's best interest to try and figure this out quickly. One option here, if he doesn't go down the blind trust or divestment path, which would be too bad, but he may not, would be either to sell his business or to sell it to his children. Let them borrow money in the marketplace. Establish firewalls. It would not be taxable because it would be sold because of conflict of interest issues. And just have the president kind of get out of this legal liability he faces if he continues to own the company as he currently does.
And what if he does none of the above?
Well, I think you're going to both find people that want to criticize him are going to find ample opportunity to do that because there are going to be questions about how he deals with China. There's going to be questions about because he has loans with the Bank of China. He has business dealings with Deutsche Bank in Germany. There are going to be grounds for that to come. It's going to be a huge distraction for a country that more than anything needs a focus on kind of dealing with these issues. I would note, and this is there's kind of two parts here that kind of cut different ways. One is that when Trump ran, he ran as a businessman. So people were very clear that he had a global business. So in that sense, I think it is fair to say that is the starting point. That he could have holdings that created conflicts was not a surprise. On the other hand, I think it is important to remember that he did not win the popular vote. In fact, it looks like now that people voted for his opponent by more than 1 million votes. So he has work to do both in terms of reassuring his own supporters as well as those who voted against him. And I think it's important to focus on how do we ensure the country does not kind of exacerbate this split, but find common ground so that the focus can be not on his conflicts of interest, but on the policies that really face this country, everything from infrastructure to tax policy to the role that money plays in elections, these are all big issues that need a lot of attention that are going to be just really hard to get people to focus on.
And that's Meredith McGeehee. She's strategic advisor at the Campaign Legal Center, one of the organizations that signed a letter sent to Donald Trump asking him to put his business assets and investments into a genuine blind trust. She's also chief of policy programs and strategy at Issue One. And you can join our conversation. Do you care about this issue? We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Meredith, let me read a couple of comments that we have here. An email from Judy in Chestnut Hill. If the throw the bums out scenario is one of the explanations for Trump, why did all the bums get reelected? A tweet from Paul. Will the EPA and Supreme Court survive as the people's safeguards given Republican control of everything? Gee, just think, if people just wanted free college, we wouldn't be worrying about Donald Trump. Questions about the $25 million settlement having to do with Trump University. A tweet from Roxanne. Congress must investigate these issues. Republicans must realize country comes before party. And Meredith, I think that's really the issue before our U.S. Congress.
This is really a question that has some pretty, I won't say easy answers, but I think it is a question that needs to be taken off the table as quickly as possible. Look, we've never had a situation. Now, one of the difficulties in addition to these holdings that, as a real estate person, much of the holdings are dealing with banks, et cetera, is also just the selling of the Trump brand. In many cases, as you know, many of your leaders probably are, your listeners are probably aware of that. Many times the Trump is just selling a name, not actually owning the building. So these are some of the more complicated parts here. But I think the part that concerns me the most, and I think should concern your listeners the most, are the holdings that interact with foreign governments. There was one count that Mr. President-elect Trump has holdings in 18 different countries.
Right.
When it's not even so much what his activities will be or his meetings. Obviously, some questions have been raised about that already. But foreign leaders will say, oh, well, maybe I should stay at the Trump Hotel, or maybe I should give his kids these preferential treatment, because then it will come back and benefit my business. So I think there will be, because this is the way business is done in a lot of the world. It hasn't been for the United States. But for many foreign leaders, they are going to make assumptions about how you get in the good graces of the president-elect. And that's a great concern.
A comment from Stephanie, picking up on something you said, Meredith. If Trump sold his businesses to his children, that wouldn't seem to address the issue of conflict of interest, because, of course, he could buy it back at the end of his term. Doesn't that seem likely? Meredith?
Well, he's actually stated he doesn't have interest in it anymore. But if he bought it back, as long as there was a firewall while he was president, if he was no longer wielding government power, then that he would be able to do that as a private citizen. Though, obviously, as a former president, you still have a lot of influence. So it's not the qualified blind trust is by far and away the best option here. But I think if that does not happen, it's important to try and think of what other actions can be taken and can he take to try and deal with these conflicts of interest and the appearance of a conflict.
Here's an email from Vicky. If the IRS audit of the Trump tax return should reveal tax evasion or some other illegality, how would that be addressed? I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but that's it's a question, I think, Meredith, that hangs out there.
Yes, and, you know, there's been questions in the past about what can a sitting president be sued for or indicted for. You know, we have had some experience with this as a country when Watergate arises, arises to mind. We also had a situation where President Clinton was sued by Paula Jones, and there were court cases trying to determine if a lawsuit like that could go on while the president was in office. And in the end, there were decisions that moved forward. So you're really getting into a very difficult territory, and not a very good one. Obviously, the president appoints the attorney general, and the attorney general decides what cases to pursue. Otherwise, you're looking to Congress in an impeachment process. And I don't, as I said, I just don't think I know anyone who wants to put the country through that.
And my understanding is that Paula Jones' lawyer was Kellyanne Conway's husband. Do I have that right? Do you know?
Yes, that is correct.
That is correct. Just to kind of complete the circle here, let me get, looks like Louise from Norristown to join us. Louise, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're
welcome. The reason that I'm calling is I am not only concerned about his conflict of interest with regards to his financial issues, but his dismissal of the media, whom I believe is the ones, they're the ones that are going to reveal all of this. And, you know, him not having any news conferences, putting out that video, dodging the media when he wants to get private, and even living in New York, I think are all signs that he's trying not to let us, the citizens of the United States, find out what's going on.
Well, Louise, let me put your comment to Meredith McGeehee. And we heard earlier in the hour from Eric Lipton, one of the investigative reporters for The Times. And he said they will be redoubling their efforts to investigate and dig as deep as they can into this potential for conflict of interest. But Meredith, what are your thoughts about the role of the press in all of this?
Well, obviously, it's always good to have some concerns about when politicians interact with the media. I've been dealing with politicians in Washington for more than 30 years, and I don't know any of them that like the media. It is, by its very nature, and it should be, an adversarial relationship in many instances. Obviously, when you have a president who is trying to circumvent the media, we're going to all have to figure out if that is something that the American people are going to respond to. I would have to note that there is currently no incentive for President-elect Trump to try and interact with the media, and that is what he's doing in using Twitter and using YouTube and finding ways to evade the filters, the traditional filters that have been put in place. So in some ways, I'm not surprised that a politician would try and find a way to get the word out. But for all of us who believe in the Fourth Estate, my reaction is you guys just got to, you know, the Fourth Estate has to continue to do their job and try harder and continue to put the pressure on. If there seems to be real concern that he's not holding press conferences or being as public or as transparent as the American people want, I think at some point they will respond to that. But right now, all of the incentives are for him to evade that filter and to put out the message he wants to put out. And so he's going to continue to do it because there is absolutely no cost to him at the moment to do otherwise.
Well, Meredith McGeehee, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times, getting us thinking about a whole host of important issues.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Strategic advisor at the Campaign Legal Center, also chief of policy programs and strategy at Issue One. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. You can find out more about the program. You can learn how to download a podcast of the show. Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Sign up for our newsletter. Listen to us on satellite radio. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thanks for joining us.